In John's Gospel, Jesus says that he is the resurrection and the life. What does that mean? How does he prove it? Well, we're going to spend some time in that gospel over the next few weeks here on this podcast as I play you some of the sermons I've given at my church on the topic. So let's dive into John now and see what he has to say. Have you ever seen a TV show which features a court? There's always that one scene where the jury is sent out and you believe that the case has been made. But when the jury return, they give you the verdict that you weren't expecting. Have you ever seen something like that? Izzy and I have been going home after these evenings to watch Poldark, at least whilst it was on TV. And there was a scene just like that in the recent series. How can they think that that guy is guilty in light of all the evidence we've just seen? Well, John's been doing the same thing for us throughout this gospel. He's set up a courtroom for us. He's had witnesses. He's had evidence. And now, in this passage, we are at the end of Jesus' public ministry. These are the last words Jesus will speak to everybody. And here, we are told the verdict of the crowds. And did you notice what that verdict was? It was unbelief. Total rejection. How can these people do that in light of everything that they've just seen, in light of all the evidence? Well, we're going to get an answer to that tonight. And to do that, we're going to be asking two questions. The first question is, how can they not believe? And the second being, how can we believe? So let's have that first question. There we go. How can they not believe? Have a look at verse 37 with me. Even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. I think we're meant to be shocked. Even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. I know in our smaller group last week, we were having a conversation about this. Just in the parts of John we've seen in these evenings, we've had Lazarus, haven't we? That walking, talking, undeniable proof of who Jesus is. If you ever wanted evidence, well, there it is. And we've seen the people's responses to Lazarus. They can't deny that Jesus has actually done these things. They've all seen them. They've all seen Lazarus walking around. But they still did not believe in him. I don't know if you have one of those friends who you want to have a conversation with and you think that if you give them a knockdown argument, they're going to become a Christian. Have you ever had a friend like that? If you were just to line up the right amount of unflappable evidence. But when you do that, after another rejection, which seems totally out of place, after all of that, you might just ask them, well then, what then would make you believe? Usually their answer is something like seeing my name written up in the stars or something equally unbelievable. But in light of this passage, should we be surprised? These people have the Son of God in their midst and they still would not believe in him. Does that shock you? If Jesus is meant to be the long-promised king, the king who's come to save his people, how can his people end up rejecting him? Does that mean that he's failed? From the perspective of gaining followers and a people, this is a pretty shocking failure, isn't it? For those questioning if Jesus really is who he says he is, well, this is a shock, isn't it? But I don't think that's the only shock we get in this passage, because they continue. Because John seems to say, if we're reading this carefully, that God has always planned for that to be the case. God has always planned for that to be the case. Have a look at verse 38. Now, this is why I loaded the song into your head. John quotes Isaiah chapter 53, verse 1. He says, the people would not believe so that Isaiah would be fulfilled. It's one of those connections, again, that John says, that when you think about it, it just seems a little bit odd. We had one of those a few weeks back. Jesus loved Lazarus, so he stayed where he was. Do you remember that? Even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. This was to fulfill the word of Isaiah the prophet. Lord, who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Isaiah is speaking in Israel's history about the people not believing that God's going to save them through the suffering servant. No one's going to believe that message, Isaiah says. No one's going to recognize God's power at work. And John is saying that's the same as it was then, is the same now in Jesus' time. As the fulfillment of that suffering servant appears on the scene, we sang about that earlier, remember? And as John says this, he's loading Isaiah 53 into their minds, because Isaiah says that the people will reject his message, but then that leads to the suffering servant dying. Isaiah 53 verse 1 is followed by Isaiah 53 verse 2. It's a normal counting system, isn't it? The tender roots growing up. A king from David's line. The lamb taking the place of sinners. The king of the people being lifted up in their place. So John can say in verse 39, for this reason, they could not believe. In order to make Isaiah 53 happen, for the suffering servant to be able to do his work, for this reason, the people could not believe. John takes us back to Isaiah again in verse 40, but this time from chapter 6, the first song we sang. Isaiah is given the most glorious job description, to be the messenger of God to his people. But also the most depressing job description in Isaiah 6, because he's told no one is going to respond to his message. That's a pretty shocking ministry for Isaiah, isn't it? They will not see, they cannot see, they are blind. Isn't that what we've seen with Jesus as we've gone through John? So we see that the people would not believe and the people could not believe. There's a tension there, isn't there? It's not a tension we always like, but that's the tension that the Bible is giving us. The tension between people's responsibility and God's sovereignty. If you want to think more about that, let me refer you to Chris Stead at our weekend away. The talks are still online. But John places those two facts together. Responsibility, sovereignty, and he doesn't say there's a contradiction there at all. So which of those is the bigger shock to you this evening? That the people would not believe, or that God had planned it that way? But there are those who do see. Did you notice them? There are those who see God's glory and believe. The first of those is Isaiah. Isaiah believed. And what did it cause him to do? It caused him to speak God's words to his people, to live for God, even though it seemed hopeless. And that's what John wants his readers to do, to see and believe in Jesus. But other than Isaiah, well, we're left with a bleak picture, aren't we? Even those who had seen all of what Jesus had done did not really believe in him. That's what John's getting at in verses 42 and 43. If we remember remember last week, Jesus had said that true belief means you follow as well. That's a warning for us today, isn't it? You can nod along and you can agree with all the facts that are given to you. Yes, Jesus is a miracle worker. Yes, Jesus is the king. But what do you do with that? Does it change your life? Do you live that out? Because that's the warning here. I don't think we're meant to see these people here in these verses in a good way. I don't think John wants us to think, oh, these guys are on the right track. Isaiah saw God's glory, so he spoke for God. These people here prefer the glory of man rather than from God. Just as Jesus had just said in verse 25, if you love glory from people, you can't have the glory from God. These people don't really believe. They're willfully and sovereignly blind. That's the answer to the question. That's how these people can't believe. And that's pretty depressing, isn't it, if we face that? But it leads us to the question of how then can we believe? John wants us to see here the utter madness of the people in light of Jesus. And he wants us to believe in Jesus and have life in his name. He's told us that's his purpose right at the end of his gospel. And we just saw those people in verses 42 and 43 that there is a right sort of belief. A sort of belief that believes and acts on it. In Jesus' final words publicly, he cries out to the people, verse 44. Whoever believes in me does not believe in me only, but in the one who sent me. That's the first thing about true belief. A true belief in Jesus is a true belief in the one who sent him. In those words, Jesus is saying something similar to how John opened his gospel in chapter 1. Belief in the Son is belief in the Father. There's a unity in the Godhead. As we worked through the Nicene Creed in the mornings, we've seen that. And that means to miss out on Jesus is to miss out on God. To misunderstand who Jesus is and what he's come to do is to misunderstand who God is and what God has come to do. And at the same time, Jesus can also say in verse 45 that the one who looks on him sees the one who sent him. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. In Jesus, God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell. To look on Jesus is to see God. We've actually seen that already in this passage. I don't know if you've noticed that. Just look at how Isaiah saw things in verse 41. Isaiah, back in Isaiah 6, saw Jesus. You notice that? That's what John's saying. If you were to ask Isaiah, who did you see, Isaiah, on the throne? He'd say, God. If you ask John who Isaiah saw, he says he saw Jesus. No contradiction, both are true. That's something I've already shared with you, I like to use with the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's an inescapable fact. Isaiah saw God, John says he saw Jesus. And true faith takes you out of darkness. Do you see the connection there between darkness and seeing? In a few weeks' time, when it's pitch black outside and we turn these lights off, you don't want to try walking around this room, especially when the sports equipment's been left out. You need light to see properly, don't you? To see properly, to live properly, you need light. And Jesus here says he has come into the world as that light. Again, echoes from the beginning of John's gospel. So that means that what Jesus says is important, doesn't it? Those people earlier had heard what he had said. They'd nodded along, but they didn't truly believe it. Or as Jesus says in verse 47, they did not keep his words. To them, judgment is going to come. To those who prefer to stay in the darkness and reject that light, they're going to stay in that darkness. And again, that verse takes us back in time to show us that has always been the case with God's people. It's always been the case that people have rejected God's message. You see, Jesus is quoting Deuteronomy 18. We did this in growth groups, didn't we, a couple of years ago? Deuteronomy 18, where God says he is going to raise up for the Israelites another one like Moses. And he's going to judge those who do not listen to that prophet. Well, Jesus, John says, is the fulfillment of that prophet who is greater than Moses. Because Jesus speaks the words that the Father has given him. Verse 49. He is the word of God, or as Deuteronomy here says, he speaks the words that God has put in his mouth. So this isn't something new. This has been how it's always been planned all along. True belief, true life is to listen to Jesus and to keep his words, to put them away, to live in light of them, because those words are life. Life as Lazarus has experienced, life that is bound up in Jesus, who is the resurrection and the life. That's the belief that Jesus is looking for. That's the belief that John has written his gospel to bring about. hearing Jesus' words and putting them into practice. That's what true faith is. That's how you believe. So as we read John's gospel, this is not like a jury that has mistakenly made a bad decision. The people would not, and the people could not believe. But that had been planned. It wasn't that Jesus' ministry had been a shocking failure, but instead, it was all going according to plan. So the next time you see a court pop up on TV and the jury do the unexpected thing, remember this passage. Remember that people will not and cannot believe in Jesus. But at the same time, remember that what is impossible for man is possible for God. And remember that the words that Jesus has spoken, the word that Jesus is eternal life. And therefore people need to hear it. That life is for us and that life is for others. First of all, John wants us to believe and follow Jesus. He wants us to see that there's no other way. He wants us to believe in Jesus and have life in his name, to know the truth and to live it out. But by doing that, and in doing that, we will share the good news, won't we? We'll share the gospel with people. But as we do, we're not going to be basing our success on how those people respond to us. That would be foolish. Instead, as we see here, we base success based on whether we're doing what God has said or not, and leave the rest to him. I hope you found that helpful and edifying. If you have any feedback or questions, feel free to reach out to me via email. The details are in the show notes. But until next time, let's keep praising God this week.